Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft back in 1880. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. And he went on to say that there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, he said. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings. We dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. And I say it's time to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. Now, let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email, send us an email. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Well, how will the baby boomers fare at retirement? It's a question that's been asked and raised and bandied about by politicians and the news media now for several years. And I'm looking at a report here put out by the AARP, the American Association for Retired Persons. The AARP Public Policy Institute, formed in 1985 as part of the policy and strategy group at AARP, and one of the missions of the Institute is to foster research and analysis on public policy issues of importance to midlife and older Americans, and this publication represents part of that effort. It's a 90-page report, and when I got through reading the report, I said, my God, I wish I was in the baby boom generation. I could retire with ease. And there's this constant tug of war back and forth between the doomsayers on the one side that are telling you that the end of the world is coming and the baby boomers are going to bankrupt America and we're all freaking doomed, or you got the other side over here, you know, that tell you, hey, the roses are growing in the pasture and the clover is blooming and everything is just roasty toasty and everything is great. and I'm sitting here on the sidelines, and I read my newsletters, you know, from week to week, and I read my newspapers, and I watch the Lehrer News Hour and Katie Couric, and so I thought, well, let me look into this thing, and let me see what the answer is. Who's telling the truth? I mean, you can't have a roasty toasty. Everything is coming up sevens on the one hand, and then you got these doomsayers on the other side. It's going to bankrupt America. Well, which is it? And why do we have the controversy in the first place? What's this controversy all about? We never had it when we were talking about the people retiring in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. How come the people that are retiring starting in the year 2008 for the next 18 years are causing all this problem? What happened that this group of people born between 1946 and 1964 are causing all this hoopla? My generation isn't causing any hoopla. And it doesn't appear that the generations that are coming after the baby boomers are going to be causing much hoopla. At least I'm not reading about it in the press. But this particular group from 46 to 64, those people right there, 77 million of them, they tell us. And this 77 million pay 60% of the taxes going into the coffers of the American empire. I sit here and I say, okay, so when they retire, so what's the big deal? Well, the baby boomers have often been characterized as the profligate offspring of the Depression era savers, now known as the Greatest Generation. Newspaper headlines frequently warn that aging boomers are headed for financial catastrophe in retirement because they're not saving enough. And we also see stories, albeit less frequently, that boomers will be the richest generation in history. Some have argued that boomers will inherit anywhere from $10 trillion to $40 trillion in wealth, which yields between $132,000 per boomer, which is more than the median boomer household had accumulated by 2001. They're going to inherit somewhere between, you know, $10 and $40 trillion, which is going to yield somewhere between $130,000 and $560,000 per boomer. Can these seemingly conflicting stories be reconciled? Well, divining the retirement fate of baby boomers has become a regular preoccupation of journalists and pundits who know that stories about boomers are sure to capture the rapt attention of that most educated, numerous, and some would say self-absorbed generation in American history. But the answer to the question of the adequacy of boomer retirement preparation is an elusive one. The preponderance of the punditry seems to suggest a pessimistic conclusion, but some of the best work on the subject is much more optimistic. Now, you'll notice here that it's become a regular preoccupation of journalists and pundits to write stories about the boomer generation, because when you're born between 1946 and 64, that makes you a boomer. I don't know why you're a boomer instead of a loser or a winner or a jumper or a sitter or something else, but for some reason you're a boomer. Somebody wrote a book called The Boomer Generation. And as a result of that, they've hung a label on you. And then there's a group of people, 77 million, born in that demographic time frame. And so they hang a label on you, and then they kind of compartmentalize you, and they set you apart from everybody else in society. Like, you're not really Americans. You're not really part of this society over here. You're some kind of an elite group over here, like the Rangers, you know, or the SEALs. Some little group over here that's aloof from all the rest of us. So, how will the baby boomers fare at retirement? That was the question that we needed to answer. Well, first of all, going back here to the protocols of the learned elders, we take a look at the journalists themselves, the people who write these articles. And in 1884, an article was written. It was called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And whether you're a Jew or a Gentile, or whether you're a Catholic or a Protestant or something else in between, there isn't any argument about the fact that all of these protocols have already come to pass, and they're already fully implemented. So whether you want to take credit for it or you want to foist it off on somebody else. But here's the way the game is being played. Now, remember my introduction here. I told you a story about John Swinton, 1880. John Swinton, newspaper editor, the New York Tribune. And he says, there's no such thing as a free and independent press in 1880. Not in the United States of America. Maybe in Katanga province of the Belgian Congo or something, maybe. But it isn't here in New York City. So if you think Katie Couric and Dan Rather and Brian Williams and Tom Brokaw and all the news media guys over there, past, present, and future, are telling you the truth or giving you the straight skinny about what's going on in the world out here, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. It hasn't happened in my lifetime. It isn't happening today and isn't likely to happen in the future. Well, not anytime soon. But here's what some pundit had to say back in 1884 when this issue came up in a meeting in Bern, Switzerland, when these protocols were first put to press. This is what they had in mind. It says, we shall handle the press in the following manner. Number one, we shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. And we shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Number two, not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Now, boys and girls, all news is centralized through the United Press, the Associated Press, and Reuters from all over the world. Anything that you hear about Israel and Lebanon, or about Iraq, or about Afghanistan, or Pakistan, or the Pashtuns, or anybody else in the world, you get it through those three news agencies. Now, whoever it is that controls those three news agencies determines what you think, what you know, what you hear, and what you see on television. And you're not going to get any news, and you're not going to get any information that doesn't come through those three sources. And if you think you can, what do you think there? Number three, literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently, our government will become the owner of most of the journals. And if we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. This must not be suspected by the public. For which reason, all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and then rendered harmless. It's called the 12th Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Now, there's some controversy, and somebody said, well, that wasn't written in 1884, and Henry Ford was a liar and an anti-Jewish Semitic and so on. I don't care. Hell, if Henry Ford dreamed this up in a nightmare in 1922 and then published it in 1922, for crying out loud, it's already come to pass in the year 2007. This is past news. This is past history. It's already in force and effect. And so when we see a controversy in the press raging back and forth between the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal or somebody else, all you're talking about here is elitist insider newspaper and press owners who are putting up a couple of issues for you to keep your mind off of what's really going on in the world. And so the Iraq War is a great distraction. Keeps your mind on something that's totally irrelevant and immaterial. You're not going to advance the war or detract on the war. I mean, you can protest and you can jump up and down, hoop and holler and do whatever the hell you want, but it isn't going to change anything. And then he said, well, I'll vote somebody out. What the hell difference does it make whether you vote Bush in or Kerry in? They're both skull and bones men. The public policy of the United States comes out of Skull and Bones, and you had a choice between Skull and Bones A and Skull and Bones B. And you people chose Skull and Bones A, and if Kerry had been president of the United States, you'd have exactly the same foreign policy dictated by the Committee of 300 that you have today. Nothing would have changed. That's why I tell people it's a waste of time for you to vote. If you're a minor party candidate like Ron Paul, you can't win. And if you do, you'll be shot. That's the end of that argument. And so you get to choose between A and B, and that's already predetermined for you. Now, if you want to practice democracy, you know, get after it. But now getting back here to the issue of the baby boomers over here and trying to figure out what's the truth about this boomer generation. Here's a 90-page report that comes from the AARP. It's entitled, How Will Boomers Fare at Retirement? By Barbara Butrica, B-U-T-R-I-C-A, and Corey Uccello, U-C-C-E-L-L-O, and John R. Geist, G-I-S-T, is the project manager. And this, you can get this from www.aarp.org. You know you're a baby boomer. Do you want a report that comes up all sevens, all spades, all roses, and all clover? This is the report for you. I read it. It's got statistics and tables and all the good stuff in here. I got to page 37, and one glaring deficit kept gnawing at me. I said, okay, if all of these numbers are true, what's the purchasing power of this money when we get to the bottom side here? And I never said. It's like the topic of Building 7 at the Trade Center complex. Nobody wants to talk about Building 7, you know, which was demolished intentionally at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon on 9/11. I mean, that building fell right down into the basement over there. It had already been wired for demolition. And it was demolished. 42-story building? See, the third plane that crashed over there in Pennsylvania was supposed to hit that building. And then when it collapsed, it said, well, see, it was the airplane that did it. Well, the airplane crashed in Pennsylvania. And so, therefore, it missed its target. And so they still had to demolish the building because it had all of this incriminating evidence in it. You know, the TWA 800 was one of them, was in that building. Just like the Murr building, you know, over in Oklahoma City, had to be destroyed. It had all the Branch Davidian evidence in it. It had to be destroyed. And so when these events transpire, we call these false flag operations, or false flag, as Alex Jones called the false flag events, like the Reichstag and the Gulf of Tonkin and so on. And we've got a false flag operation going on here with these baby boomers, and how are they going to fare at retirement? On the one hand, you've got the guys that are telling the mainstream press, you know, everything's coming up sevens and roses. And then you got the underground press over here saying, you know, and even some of the, you know, above ground press, Wall Street Journal, writing some articles. Alan Greenspan, I'll cite an article here by Alan Greenspan, says, say, wait a minute, maybe we got a problem here that you ought to be concerned about. Now, I'm not a baby boom generation guy, but I'm old enough to retire, and I decided not to retire. I got to be 62, and I said, I don't think I'm going to retire. I think I'll just keep right on working until I die. And I ask myself the question, what is the purpose of life? Is the purpose of life retirement? Well, in America, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. If you go to the public school system, you go on to college, and you work your life and pay your taxes, the purpose of life is to retire. And we prepare for retirement in this country like most people prepare to go to heaven. You know, religious people, they go to church every Sunday. Well, people that want to retire, people, baby boomers, you know, is one of those retirement groups, you know. The mantra seems to be the purpose for life is retirement. And so we open 401ks and Krogs, and we join Social Security, and we have retirement benefits, and we work for the airline for 30 years. And our objective is to get to the point where we're drawing this income, and we're going to retire for the rest of our lives, and we're not going to work anymore. We want to work for 30 years, and then we want to stop working for 60 if we could. And we want to live off of somebody else. Now, Moses never retired. Moses never retired. In fact, I looked through the scripture, and I couldn't find anybody that retired. Not a single one. I found a few of them that got killed. I found a few of them that died, you know, like Samuel, he died. He got to old age, and he kicked off. But when he died, he was still the chief priest of the country, the high priest of the country, held the office of John Roberts, our chief justice of the Supreme Court. That was his office in Israel. He was the chief justice. Everybody worked until they died. Now, when I was a kid, we didn't talk about retirement. And my grandparents, they didn't talk about retirement. They talked about a time when they might not be able to work as much, or they might not be able to work at all because they might be sick or something like that. And so they needed to have, you know, income to carry them through so they would not be a burden upon their children. Today, people have an entirely different viewpoint. They don't care if they're a burden on their children or not. It's irrelevant. We're going to spend, 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 live, 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 and let the devil take the hindmost. That's the attitude that I see. That's what I observe going on around me here. And, of course, that's what I see here in the news reports. And some of these news reports are, you know, kind of derogatory. They're pessimistic, and they say, hey, wait a minute, if we do the numbers over here, this thing isn't going to work out near as well as we thought it was. So there's the 90-page report, and let me throw that over there on that pile. I'm not going to read you the 90-page report and bore you to tears. I'm here to tell you that that report there is going to tell you everything that you want to hear on the positive side. If there's anything good you want to hear, it comes right out of the AARP. And it comes out of the government agencies and government statistics. And here was the problem that I saw when I looked at that. I said, do these numbers turn up? Do these numbers come out on the bottom line? And the answer was, no, they don't. Now, one of the things that I see that people want to do is they want to invest in the stock market. So they do. They invest in the stock market. And when they get all through with their investing, they, between 1960 and 2000, they had a return of 5%. Now, when I read stories in the press, my God, you can't believe the success that people have in the stock market. I don't personally know of anybody that's ever made a dime in the stock market. Not a single person. I'm pushing 70 kids, and I don't know a single one. Now, I know there are some people out there that make money in stocks. And I don't personally know them. Hillary Clinton, I don't know her personally. She made some money in stocks. And I think it was a put-up deal, but, you know, neither here nor there. She made money on it. I know that brokers make money on the stock market. They get paid a commission, just like a real estate broker. He gets paid, you know, for what he does. And there's probably some investors out there that invest in the market and actually make some money at it from time to time. I wouldn't say that there aren't. I just said that I don't know of any. So why don't you think about that for a minute and then ask yourself, is there anybody that you know of that's made any money in the stock market that you could point to and say, hey, Bob, what did you do in the stock market that you made money at? How did you do that? And can I emulate that? Can I do that? Now, I sat down the other day and I did some numbers here. So let me give you these numbers here as it relates to purchasing power. Because the principle or the phenomenon of geometric progression is pretty important in this process of making money. I'm a businessman and I'm familiar with geometric and arithmetic progression. I can do my percentages. And then I've made a couple of dollars in my lifetime. And then I'm old enough now that I can sit back and enjoy a little of it. But I did a little number crunching over here, and what the AARP didn't tell you was that the Social Security dollars that you paid in 1960, and then they're going to give you a 3.4% COLA, that's a cost of living index increase every year. Like last year, they gave you 3.4%, but inflation ran 10%. So that tells me that you got about a 6% deficiency there, don't you? 6.6. And nobody counts that. Now, the masses of Americans have gone to public school and they're unable to do complex percentage calculations. They cannot do that. So I did it for you, and I'm going to tell you the answer to the riddle. The general conception is this. If you put $10,000 of your savings or your earnings into the stock market, and you leave it there for the long haul, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 100, 200, 500,000 years, you will always make money. That's the mantra that's being preached. The period of time that is the most productive period of time in the history of the stock market is from 1960 to the year 2000. And it's a 40-year period, and it covers booms and busts, and it's an average. And the average Dow Jones Industrial. There's your blue chip stocks. Best stocks you can buy. Well, that's what they tell us. You average 5% for 40 years. Now, that's impressive. I got to tell you. Because if you took $10,000 and invested it in the stock market on January 1st, 1960, and you left it there until January 1st, 2000, do you know how much money you'd have at compound interest? Well, the answer is $73,920.08. Now, that's impressive. That is marvelous. And that's what they tell you. You see, if you invest in the stock market and you get 5% return and use the rule of 72, and that what that is, you take the number 72 and just divide it by whatever interest rate or whatever inflation rate that you've got. And let's just divide that by 0.05. And the answer is 14.4. Now, that means that the $10,000 that you put in the bank in 14.4 years is going to double. And to show you how impressive that is, you take $10,000 on year one, 1960, and at the end of the year, you get paid $500 in interest. So on January 1st, 1961, you have $10,500 in your account. Now, in 1961, you're earning 5% interest not on $10,000, but on $10,500. Which at the end of 1961, on January 1st, 1962, you're going to have $10,525. And then when you add that to the $500 you made last year, you now have in your account $11,025, which is now earning interest at 5%, which is going to pay you $551.25 in 1962. And then when you add that up, it adds up to $11,576. Well, look at this. Your $10,000 doubles to $20,000 in the year 1974. Right on schedule. 14 years later, your $10,000 at 5% interest has now moved up to $20,789.23. But it gets better than that now because it doesn't take 14 years for your $10,000 to double again. Oh, no. Because, see, now you've got $10,000 in original capital and $10,000 in interest. So now you've got $20,000. So now to double that $20,000 to $30,000, that occurs in 1982. So from 74 to 82 is only 8 years. It gets better. Now, to make another $10,000, you go from 1982 to $40,000 is in 1988. So now you've made another $10,000. You're at $41,161 in 1988, which is only 6 years later. But it gets better than that. And this is what the magic of compounding is all about. From 1988 to $50,000 is only 1992. So in 4 years, you made another $10,000. It gets better. You go from $50,000 to $60,000 in another 4 years, 1992 to 1996. And then you go from 1996 to the year 1999, and only 3 years, you make another $10,000. You're up to $70,000. You've got seven times your original capital. Now, you talk about a license to steal. This compounding over here is really something. And investing for the long haul. This is what they taught you in college. Remember? This is what the stockbroker told you. You invest this money and it doubles and doubles and doubles. Well, of course, they probably told you a little better story than what I've told you. There was one company over here that multiplied its value in 1 year by 380%. What if you were to put $10,000 into a company whose stock went up 380% in 1 year? My God, you'd have, it boggles the mind on the profitability if you could pick stocks. I've never been good at picking stocks, but I'm pretty good at picking numbers at the crap table. I can stand there at Harrah's on the crap table and put money down on the numbers over there and throw dice. And it's amazing, just put $5 down on the field, say on 12, and then throw the dice. And if a 12 comes up, you get paid 30 times the amount you put down there. course, 12 only comes up once every 36 throws of the dice, but, you know, you takes your chances. And there's 9,000 stocks, and there's 30 stocks in the Dow Jones, and I don't know which particular stock you want to buy over here. I always thought stocks was kind of like gambling, but I just wanted to point out, it's really profitable when we talk about geometric progression. And the AARP in their report over here is telling you about geometric progression, investing for the long haul, and how you're going to get paid back more and more dollars. Now, when we take our break here, let's be thinking about, okay, but now what's the $70,000 in 2007 going to buy compared to the $10,000 back in 1960? You got seven times more money. But has inflation gone up seven times, eight times, nine times, or ten times? Will $70,000 in 2007 buy as much as $10,000 in 1960? For the answer to that, stay tuned. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling site at our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use here on the Law Hour, or on this program, are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the baby boomers, the boomer generation. The subject matter is the retirement of 77 million people that threatens to bankrupt the United States of America. That's the view of the doomsayers. On the other side are the AARP, the Department of Labor, and various other government agencies over here that are telling you the economy is healthy and robust. Social Security is as healthy as a tick in a dog's ear. And that everything's coming up sevens, roses, and blooming red clover, and so there's nothing to be concerned about, no problems. And so as a layperson just sitting over here on the sideline, I said, well, let's look into this and let's find out. Well, who's telling the truth here? Because you can't have it both ways. You can't have the bankruptcy of the nation on one end, and it's all coming up sevens and elevens on the other. No, it's either one or the other. It may not be quite as bad as, or it may be a little worse than, But, you know, it isn't going to be. Now, the question, of course, arises, why do all of these newspapers and all these pundits and all of, why all the controversy? Where'd that come from? Well, controversy is a part of, deception. Controversy is a part of deceiving. And we saw that here in the protocols. It said, you know, if we allow 10 of these private journals, we'll create 30 of our own. And so you got Rupert Murdoch over here. He's going to buy the Wall Street Journal, and he's going to add that to his newspaper empire. Well, Murdoch is one of the insider elitists. He's one of the guys that controls all of the news that comes from all over the world. And they feed us just about what we want to hear. And, you know, what people want to hear is sevens and elevens. We don't like listening to doomsayers. So I wanted to do a little arithmetic here myself, and so I thought I'd start off by showing you that geometric progression. I mean, if you could invest $10,000 in the stock market at 5% interest in 1960, then retire 40 years later, you'd have $70,000. Well, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out that if over the course of your working career that you invested $10,000 in 1960, then $10,000 in 1970, and $10,000 in 1980, and $10,000 in 1990, and then saved $10,000 from 1990 to 2000, and then you invested all of that money in something or some things that produced just 5%. Well, we're not talking about 380%, you know, return, like hitting the 12 on the field, you know, by throwing the dice once and getting 30-1 payoff. Now, we're not talking about that. We're just talking about 5%, just kind of cranking it out, you know, year after year. And it's pretty good. Now, at the same time that this 5% return, by the way, this is the historical return on the Dow Jones 30 industrial stocks from 1960 to 2000. 5%. Right on the money, 5%. I looked it up for you. I mean, go check it out for yourself. You can go to the internet and you can get on Dow Jones and start asking these questions, you know, just plug it into the computer and hell, the computer comes back and says, yeah, we can answer that question. We'll tell you. And so I thought, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's the rows of sevens, elevens. And then I said, well, do you have to pay any taxes on that? Well, most people would say, well, yeah, I guess you got to pay a little tax. Okay. Well, how much tax do you have to pay from 1960 to 2000 on the returns that you get off of the Dow Jones? Well, it's calculated in what we call capital gain tax, and the capital gain tax from 1960 to 2000 was 28%. So, in 1960, you, on January 1st, you put $10,000 into the stock market. At the on December 31st, 1960, you got a check for $500. And out of that $500, you calculated your tax was $140. That's 28% of the $500. It was $140. And on April the 15th, 1961, you sent $140 into the IRS. And you kept $360 in your account. So now you don't have $10,500, which is going to earn 5% interest. You have $10,360, which is going to earn. Remember, it's going to earn $10,360, 5% interest. Now, that's a little bit different. So you're not earning interest on that $140 because you had to pay that in tax. Now, what's the number when you get through at the end of 40 years? And if you pay your taxes? Well, the tax on that is $17,897.84. And I calculated this out year by year, laboriously. I'm looking at my notes right here. I've got two pages, 29 entries per page. And I'm looking down the list over here. I got 1960, 61, 62, 73, 75, 81, 83. Wrote them all down. And I laboriously, with my Sharp EL1197 Texas Instruments calculator, calculated every number as it went down here. Here's what the bottom line is. You get all through, you pay $17,897.84 tax, which isn't the end of the world. See, out of $73,920.08, you got to take away, you know, $18,000 in round numbers. So I just take away $18,000. And we get in round numbers here, 29 would be 8. We call it 73, 9, 20. We call it 74,000. 74,000, take away 18,000. 8 and 6 is 14. 1 from 6 is 56,920. That isn't too shabby a return. $56,920. There's another calculation in here that the AARP didn't put into their 90-page report, and that was inflation. They didn't put capital gain tax, and they didn't put inflation into their numbers. I thought, well, who in the hell are these people at the AARP anyway? Aren't these people that are doing these reports people that go to college? Aren't these people with letters after their names? Don't these people know what the hell they're talking about? They work for government, you know. They work for big prestigious organizations, and they put out these numbers, and they put out 7s and 11s and all these roasty toasty things. I read the report. God, it sounds wonderful. You baby boomers have nothing but roses to look forward to for the rest of your lives. Showed you the number here. My God, you got somewhere between $130,000 and $560,000 per boomer. I mean, per person. Not per family, per person. To retire on and live happily ever after. Hell, you can buy two Winnebagos. Drive one of them on the weekends and the other one during the week. With that kind of money. I got to thinking about that. I said, you know, I've been around here for a while too, you know. And I don't have that kind of money. And I've been working hard and saving and all of this. And I don't have that kind of money to this day. How in the hell can these people have that as selfish as that might sound? Well, anyway, I looked up the inflation rate from 1960 to 2000. What do you think that was? Well, it was 4.7% average. In some years, it was 20%, 15%, 10%, 4%, 2%. But when you average it over the long haul, and this is the way you people buy stocks, remember, over the long haul, they tell you, you know, that was 4.7%. So that means that you netted 0.3%. Net. Your net was 0.3% per year. Compounded. Now, when you go in to pay your taxes, let's just take 1960 as an example. In 1960, the inflation rate was 4.7%. Did the government say to you, we'll deduct 4.7% from your $500 profit, which would be $470, and then pay your tax on the $30 that's left over, because that's what your real profit is, $30. It's not $500. It's not $470. It's $30. That's your real profit. And it's that $30 added to your $10,000 that's actually going to give you your return at the end of the 40 years. I mean, that's where the reality is, if you can do your arithmetic. Now, most of you people out there are lost already. I understand that. That's what public school does. It was designed to dumb you down, and they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. I bring these numbers up to people. See, I'm an old-timey businessman. I am a thief. I don't deny it. I've been stealing for people all my life. I'm a salesman. I'm a thief. A liar. And a cheat. And god-awful good at it. So I just thought I'd come on the air and explain to you how we do this. You know, how we lie to you, steal from you, and cheat you. And we're doing it legally. I mean, we're not breaking any laws. I mean, you don't see people going to prison, you know, because they're taking your Social Security money and locking it up in the Social Security Trust Fund. Have you ever heard of the Social Security Trust Fund? That's another lie. It's just the way we lie to you. And the employers are in on the lie. The employers, along with the government agents over here, steal your money, and then we put it in these funds over here, and we profit off of it and live high on the hog on your money. I just thought I'd confess to you and tell you that's what I've been doing to you all these years, and so I thought I'd share it with you. I read this report from the AARP, and I said, you know, as old as I am, what if somebody just actually came out here and said, hey, let me tell you how this thing comes down. And these people have letters after their names. They may have put these numbers together because they couldn't calculate the 28% capital gain tax, the 5% compounded return on the invested capital, and the inflation rate, and do all three at the same time. Maybe they couldn't do that and then do it for 40 years. Maybe they couldn't calculate it out. I don't know. I can. I did. I'm giving you the heartbreaking numbers. So the first number is 5% for 40 years gives you 7 times your investment. Cut it's all roasty toasty until you pay your tax. Now when you pay the tax, you have to pay the tax every year. If we could have saved this money and paid the $17,000 at the end of the 40 years, then we would have had the $17,000 earning interest. But you see, we didn't have the $17,000 earning interest because you got to file and pay your taxes on the capital gain every year. Do you understand that? So you never had the $17,897.84 invested at compound interest for the 40 years. For instance, the first year, 1960, you didn't have $500 invested for 40 years. You had $360 invested for 40 years. Which produced about $56,000 worth of revenue, which was wonderful. That was terrific. Really terrific. Except that there was a 4.7% inflation rate. So the next year, you got paid 5%, $525, but it bought $470 less goods. In 1961, you could get $470 less goods. Didn't mean that you got wiped out. It means that you got paid 5%. Means that it cost you 4.7% more. It means that you netted 0.3% or $30. So it meant that the next year you got really paid interest on the $30, compounded over 40 years. It paid you something, but you had two expenses that everybody conveniently leaves out. That's inflation and capital gain tax. So here's what happens if you just take the $10,000 in 1960 and put it under your mattress in $20 bills. We don't invest it in the stock market. We don't spend it. We save it. And we put it in little bundles. And we put it under our mattress. And we just sleep on it for 40 years. Here's what happens. The very first year, you lost $470 to inflation, which means that you had $9,530 worth of purchasing power left. And it took $10,000. And you went out and spent your $10,000, but you got $9,530 worth of goods on January 1st, 1961. Then on January 1st, 1962, you took your $10,000 and went out and spent it. You got $9,082.09 worth of goods. You lost $1,000 worth of your purchasing power in the first 2 years. Well, you keep compounding the 4.7% of your $10,000 stake. And you do that for 40 years. On January 1st, 2000, you now have $1,386 worth of purchasing power left, which leaves you with a net loss of $8,614. That's what happens when you go to fiat paper currency. That's what happens when you go to, unjust weights and balances prohibited in the scripture. When you violate thou shalt not steal, there's a consequence that comes from it. Now, we Americans used to have a constitution, and in our constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, our founding fathers, dumbbells that they were, put in these 17 words at Article 1, Section 10. It said, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. We followed that law, that principle, until 1933. Then President Roosevelt took our gold away with House Joint Resolution 192. 1964 comes along. President Johnson signs legislation, takes silver out of our silver coin, gives us the clad coinage beginning in 1965. And so today we have these sandwich clad coins, and we have this irretrievably fiat currency over here, which has now inflated itself and threatens to go into hyperinflation as we continue on for the next few years. And so, because of that unjust weight and balance program that we adopted back in the 1930s, you now have this continuing inflation. Now today, as I speak, 2007, the inflation rate's 13%. you won't notice this 13% inflation rate for three more years, but the 10% inflation rate of the 2003-04-05 period, that 36 months ago, is beginning to rear its ugly head today. And that's why you're seeing, you know, the price of food, you know, went up 23% last year, 26, I forgot now, 23 or 26%. It's going to go up another 23 or 26% this year. And you've been observing around you all the prices that go up in the price of plywood and 2x4s and building materials and light fixtures, you know, whatever it is you buy, these prices keep going up. It's called price inflation. It's not what causes inflation, but it's the result of it. So you have these two wild extremes. On the one extreme, if you invest at 5% compounded, you get 7 times more money. And at the break, I said, well, will the 7 times more money buy as much as it did in 1960? And the answer is no, it won't. The answer is no, it won't. So here's the bottom line. The bottom line is this. If you had $10,000 back in 1960, and you did what all the pundits are telling you to do, invest for the long term. And you invested it, and you went through the 4.7% inflation, you filed and paid your taxes every year, you have $6,264 of purchasing power left. After you collected all that money, $73,000, you actually collected the $73,920. But you had to pay it out. And you paid it out at the rate of $17,897 for the capital gain tax. And then you paid out 4.7% of the $73,920.08 in inflation. And it left you, when you got all through with $6,264 worth of purchasing power, when you got all through with your investing and savings and filing and paying taxes and all the rest of it, you lost approximately 40% of your purchasing power. And that's what's going on here with the AARP report. So you baby boomers, you know, if you want to follow that report, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I'm a businessman. I'm an old-timey liar, thief, and cheat. I've been doing this all my life. You know, that's what businessmen do. They lie, steal, and cheat. And we're professionals at it. And so I got to be 60 years old, and I took a look around, and I said, oh, my God, the numbers don't come out here. So I took a look at the numbers, and I said, well, little Georgie, you better keep on working. In fact, you better double the stroke. Because with inflation at 10%, boys and girls, I got to make 10% more this year in 2007 just to pay for what in 2008 is going to cost 10% more. I got to make 10% compounded every year just to stay even. Now, boys and girls, if you're out here investing making 5%, we presume that that's about the best return you can get. I'm assuming that if you could get a 10, 15, 20, 30, 50, 300% return, you'd go do it, wouldn't you? Well, let me tell you, you've got to make a 10% return this year on your earnings just to pay for the increased prices of things next year. Now, let's suppose that you're on a fixed income. Social Security this year, they gave you 3.4% raise, and inflation was 10%, and so therefore you lost 6%. Now, you lost 6% of your purchasing power. That's where the numbers ought to be crunched. You know, it's how many loaves of bread did I physically walk out of the store with? Not how many more dollars did I get paid. So, to put it in a little perspective for you, let's suppose that you're getting $11,000 a year from Social Security. And that translates into 11,000 Billy Bob loaves of bread. And so you knew that you could get 11,000 loaves of bread this year. All right. Now, price inflation on this $11,000, let's just do this $11,000 times 0.10, that's $1,100. So it's going to cost you $12,100 next year. So let's put down $12,100. That means next year you got to have $12,100 to buy the same 11,000 loaves of bread that you got this year. It's going to cost you $12,100 to buy 11,000 loaves of bread because the price of the bread is going to go up by 10%. It's going to go up by a dime. It'd be $1.10 a loaf. So out of your $11,000 income, they're going to be real big guys times 0.034, they're going to give you a $374 raise. Now, you needed an $1,100 raise in order to buy the same number of loaves of bread, but they gave you $374. So we put $374 under that $1,100, and we get 6, and then we get 2, and then we get 6, and then we get 0. You lost $626. That's 626 loaves of bread in purchasing power. That's what your net loss is. And you people on Social Security think that Social Security is the third rail of politics and the greatest thing since sliced white bread. And you gave the government your 100 cent dollars back in 1960, and you're taking 62 cent dollars today. Isn't that just real special? So your standard of living has gone down is what the bottom line is. And it's not just going down. It is going down faster and faster. And that's why I stayed in the workforce. And I expect to work until the day I die. And I expect that I'm going to get up about 9 o'clock in the morning, come down here to the office to do a radio program, have a heart attack, fall flat on my face, deader than a popcorn, you know what. And when it's all said and done, they'll bury my body down the ridge, and it'll all be over for me, but I will have work to the day I die. And in fact, I think that's where you baby boomers are going to end up, doing just what I'm doing over here, and that's to maintain your standard of living. And I don't think that that's all bad, because, you know, this thing of retirement was something that was foisted off on us and sold to us by the Franklin D. Roosevelt administration when they wanted to sell Social Security. They said, shouldn't you have some security in your old age? Shouldn't you have security and stability in your old age? God, that rings good. You know, that just sounds wonderful. Well, yeah, that's what I want. Okay. Well, let's give it to you, and let's take it away from the people that are paying the taxes. Let's steal it from the people that are paying the taxes. And that sounds just real good. You know, that's from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. I love communism. I think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Especially when they're taking it from you and giving it to me. Now, when they're taking it from me and giving it to you, it ain't quite as good a program. Just being totally selfish and all, ain't near as good a program taken from me and given to you, but it's a hell of a program when they're taken from you and given to me. What if we tried a program, why don't you work and take care of yourself, and why don't George Gordon and his family work and take care of themselves, and then everybody works and takes care of himself, then we don't need to steal from anybody else. So Social Security then, and the whole concept of retirement, is simply a theft scheme. Sounds real good, especially to the receivers. And to those that are giving in the early stages of the Ponzi scheme, it doesn't sound so bad, because they know that when they get through making their payments, they get to collect on their turn. And next time we'll take a look at what happens when you keep practicing the Ponzi scheme year after year after year, and pretty soon the Ponzi scheme runs out. And then you can't collect. Then what happens? Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.